Oh, good Friday afternoon to you, Christian Gokel, alongside Cody Queen. Ben Troop, kind enough to hang out with us for a couple of segments here as well as we get you ready for a full football weekend here again. Cody, the news coming out a little bit earlier today, Georgia Southern canceling or postponing their game against FAU. Jared Binko got the call from Willie Taggart and the guys down at FAU saying that they didn't feel comfortable playing after a COVID-19 outbreak for their team this past week. So the game versus Florida Atlantic this weekend has been postponed. They're going to try to make that up at a later date. So some opportunity, Cody, to look at some other teams. A big week coming up in the Sun Belt as well. But, Ben, we appreciate you hanging out with us here to start the show. And I want to start with last night. I'm sure you were watching it. I know I was. A matchup of former Heisman winners there in Baker Mayfield and Joe Burrow. And, man, it didn't disappoint. Back and forth game. You got to see the stars at receiver that all over the field. Jarvis Landry, Odell Beckham Jr., A.J. Green, T. Higgins. A lot of star power out there. But, man, I want to start here, Ben. I think the difference in the game were the backfields, and that combo of Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt really pushed the Browns over the edge there.
Yeah, I think, it's a winning recipe every time. Or what I think number 24, I think had 24 carries for 124 yards. And I understand sometimes that you want to validate the number one overall pick by running the offense through him, but Baker Mayfield is who he's shown. I mean, I know that Odell Beckham made him look real good on that double move and that touchdown, but I just think that sometimes, you know, don't try to you know, fix something that's not broken. I mean, Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt is one of the best duos in the NFL when you look at what each other does. Nick Chubb just goes about his business, don't make a lot of waves. I mean, he is – Nick Chubb wears his uniform how it looks like on the mannequin. He's nothing extra. Kareem Hunt is going to be more of that shifty back. And I just think, Christian, it's like I don't get the whole notion of you had Freddie Kitchens last year, tried to run it through Baker Mayfield, didn't work. And comes a new guy trying to run it through Baker Mayfield. And while it worked against the Bengals, I just think that you kind of saw one guy only had, 23 throws, and he's going into, you know, his fourth year of the other guy. Our third year, the other guy is a rookie, 61 throws by Joe Burrow, zero picks. Now, a lot of people are going to say he threw the ball 61 times. Well, that's a lack of a running game. I like Joe Mixon, but he's not a Nick Chubb or Kareem Hunt. But I think that Joe Burrow is going to be a star, man. I mean, A.J. Green.
He did all of that with no preseason, no OTAs, right? Yeah. He just had the camp that they had before the season started, and I think a pretty unbelievable job, but you're right, Ben. Usually if we put it out there that one quarterback threw the ball 23 times, the other one threw it 61 times, you're going to say the quarterback that threw it 23 times won, and that's exactly what happened. Joe Burrow having to play catch-up a lot there, but I want to stay on Nick Chubb for a second here, man, because obviously we're all familiar with his career at Georgia, but I don't know if we remember how good he really was, because his freshman year playing there scoring a touchdown in his debut with no shoe on against Clemson, right? And then his sophomore year, he was unbelievable, but tears the ACL. I think he was averaging over 8 yards a carry before he blew his knee up against Tennessee. And then the junior and senior year at Georgia, you really see him start to get back to what he was. But, Ben, I think last year for the Cleveland Browns, you finally saw Nick Chubb back to full strength. The knee was 100%, no hesitation whatsoever from him. And, man, you remember the Oklahoma game, the Rose Bowl, where he's just running through Oklahoma defenders? He was doing that last night against NFL defenders, man. I think just because of the injury and how long it really takes to get back from that, we're just now seeing how good Nick Chubb really is.
Yeah, and the thing about Nick Chubb is, I mean, what helps other backs don't help him. You think, you know, now you got backs that got big personalities like a Zeke, like a Saquon Barkley. You got guys that got to go for 1,000 to 1,000 like, Christian McCaffrey. But for a pure running back, run between the tackles, a guy that can make, a guy that can definitely get you tough yards, and is a home run hitter, just go back to the Atlanta tape to where I think he had like a 70-something yarder. Nick Chubb is the prototypical running back. But I think what happens is I don't get why they just won't run the offense through him. I mean, everything goes smooth. Offensive lineman pass block better when the running game opens it up for him. And that's what you got in the Nick Chubb. I mean, doesn't make a lot of waves. And I think the thing about it is, you know, when people talk about, you know, in a world today, it's always look at me, look at me, look at me. Nick Chubb has never been that. Was willing to share the wealth in college. with Sony Michel, you know, with DeAndre Swift. But when you look at what he brings to the table with Cleveland, if you take Nick Chubb off that field, Baker Mayfield, you might as well take him off too. I don't get why Baker Mayfield doesn't audible more to some running to the running game, because he moved the chains to keep you in manageable third downs. He can get you, he can catch the ball out the backfield. I don't know what this notion of is. Oh, he got to learn how to pass block better. No, you don't pay running backs to pass block. You play offensive linemen to pass block. But yeah, Nick Chubb to me will be one of those guys, Christian. He'll end up leading the league in rushing, going to the Pro Bowl, and people will still think he's underrated. If Bill Belichick said that, you know, Russell Wilson's underrated. No, Nick Chubb is underrated. Nick Chubb is about, because, like I said, I don't need to be flashy. My game is nice. I don't need to talk. My game is nice. And I don't think that Cleveland got the best offensive line, but you got a great running. Well, just imagine Saquon Barkley played with Cleveland and they featured him. I just think that, yeah, Nick Chubb just said, look, man, I've been doing this. I ain't never really talked a lot. I ain't never really brought no attention to me. But to still have the career I had at Georgia, when I was supposed to never play football again after that Tennessee injury, to see what the career I'm having, I think they just drafted wrong. Nick Chubb should have been the number one pick. Baker Mayfield should have been the second round pick. And maybe they will be featuring him the way they should. Because, Christian, the greatest thing ever happened to Baker Mayfield is Nick Chubb. That's the greatest thing ever happened to him, because when you look at the stat sheet, I say, okay, oh, he only threw the ball 23 times. Yep. Go down to the rush.
Well, and in Cleveland, you know that you have a good running back there if all of a sudden Cleveland's got a fullback that they're trading a seventh-round pick for, and they're lining up in the I formation. So interesting stuff there. Nick Chubb looking dynamite through the first couple weeks of the season. Cody, Joe Burrow last night, he threw the ball 61 times, only completed 37 of them, but as we said, no preseason, right? So these are really his first live game snaps in the NFL. 0-2, he said it last night. He don't think he's ever lost two games in a row in any sport ever. So obviously he doesn't like that. I think maybe the offensive line, probably the biggest issue that team's facing, and their defense just couldn't get off the field last night. But your thoughts on the first or the number one overall pick through the first couple weeks?
300-something yards. He did great. The reason why they started to pass so much in the second half, in the first half, Joe Mixon couldn't get many yards at all. Through the rushing, they went down too much, had to obviously throw it more. But from what I'm seeing from Joe Burrow and Ross and A.J. Green and, you know, I forgot what the tight end's name is, but doing amazing things. Yeah. And Gresham. I think that he's going to be a star in the league. Either he's going to do well these years for Bengals and just not really do well because of the talent, challenging division that they have. Yep. You got the Ravens and all that stuff, so it kind of sucks what division that you're in. And you got the Steelers. I could definitely see him making this a third wild card team, but you got to think he's young, and Ben Roethlisberger is going to be out soon, so this team might be up for the second spot in wild card. I just want to see him play well for the rest of the season. He's your pick for a rookie of the year, and I agree with that. The way he's been playing has been amazing. He finally got some touchdown throws last night. His first game, he didn't get any. He got one rushing touchdown. But against Baker Mayfield, I think he looked better than Baker Mayfield. Yeah. Baker Mayfield, you got to think, he played against Cincinnati's defense.
Yeah, I want to see what y'all think. I want to see what y'all think about this. Ben, obviously, I think you were in the league at the same time as him, and Cody, you watched him. I think Joe Burrow looks a lot like Tony Romo when he plays. He's soup, and a lot of people hear Tony Romo and they think a bad quarterback. Romo was an excellent NFL quarterback, and I think the thing that he did really well was move around in the backfield. And yet, Ben, Joe Burrow had his welcome to the NFL moment last night, right, where he moved outside of the pocket, tried to put a spin move that had worked against Georgia in the SEC championship, but Sheldon Rankins is an NFL veteran and sat him down like with both shoulder pads, like literally just grabbed Joe Burrow and said, sit down. That spin move ain't working here. But I think he reminds me a little bit of Tony Romo the way he plays.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't lack confidence. And the eye test, if you would have told me, if you knew nothing about Joe Burrow, know nothing about Baker Mayfield, which one looked more like a rookie last night and which one looked more like a vet? And that would be Joe. I mean, 61 throws, nothing screams trust in a quarterback more than we're going to let you sit back and throw the ball. Number one, that's adjusted to the fact that the running game isn't working, but he had zero picks. 61 throws, that's like three games worth of throws for Baker Mayfield. And I just think that the one thing you like about Joe Burrow, man, he doesn't like to lose. And the thing about it is I understand that, you know, when people talk about Cincinnati, Cincinnati has a winning culture. They just don't win in the playoffs. Andy Dalton did a good job when he was there. But I just think that when you think about the fact that a guy coming out of LSU, going to be the number one overall pick, Heisman, greatest season we ever seen, does that always translate to the next level? And for Joe Burrow, it does. I think for Baker Mayfield, he's going to need an offense that's tailored more because they've literally given Baker Mayfield everything. Two-headed monster at receiver, two-headed monster at running back. David Njoku went down. You still got Austin Hooper. You still drafted a left tackle out of Alabama. Joe Burrow said, it don't matter who. You know, give me whomever. My first touchdown pass of my career was not to A.J. Green or Ross. It was a freaking tight end. You know, in a freaking cover two that the freaking corner is looking right at. Anyway, that's just frustrating defense sometimes. But yes, Christian and Cody, Joe Burrow is going to be a star strictly because he ain't got the Joe man next year. No, bump that. Like we can win right now. I mean, so and you're right. When people talk about Tony Romo, they go straight to the postseason. Tony Romo is about as good as you can play the quarterback position. Like Tony Romo was nice, and he's even nicer because of where he played. The limelight and the microscope under Dallas, it's a little bit different. Like, we know who Dak is, yeah. Half because of who he plays for, you know, and half because of how he plays. But, yeah, I like Joe Burrow, man. He's built for the spotlight. He ain't shying away because he's in Cincinnati. He's not trying to be the laughing stock of that division. I agree with you, Cody. If they can get him a complimentary running game, oh, they're gonna have some problems. They're gonna be a problem for people because Geno Atkins and they didn't play last night. But yeah, I like Joe Burrow. I think he's gonna be great for the league for a long time. And hey, man, he's Joe Cool. Man, he outplayed Baker Mayfield last night. And that's not Baker Mayfield's fault. Yeah. Baker Mayfield got the dub, but it wasn't because of Baker. It was because of Hunt. It was because of Nick Chubb. But yeah, Joe Burrow going to be nice for a long time.
Well, quickly here, I know you got to go get ready for the show here in a little bit. We want you to stick around for Sean Quinn in the next segment. Falcons heading out to Dallas. Ben, you obviously played in the league for a while. When a defensive coordinator comes out and says, maybe we didn't take the passing game of the Seahawks as seriously as we needed to, like Raheem Morris said, saying that we were focusing on shutting down Chris Carson. There's no way he actually says what everybody interpreted he was saying there, right? That had to be him covering for his secondary, right?
Yeah, a little bit he is. I think because he understands that, you know, I mean, and Chris, you know this more than anything. No greater position you need confidence in than a DB. You out there by yourself. You can't hear nothing. But my thing is this. If you did not take Russell last name Wilson seriously, now you finna get a bigger Russ. He ain't as good as throwing, but Gallup. Then you talking about CeeDee Lamb. Oh, my God. Then you talking about Cooper. Then you talking about Zeke. Well, I don't know what they did last week, but they need to undo it this week, eat their weeds or whatever, because Christian, it's going to be either really, really good or really, really bad, especially when both teams are not trying to start off 0-2.
Ben, it was like watching, like being in high school and watching your friend get into a fight, but the other kid's like actually good at it. You're like, your friend's getting his butt kicked, but you're also respecting the other kid's game. You're like, wow, the Falcons are getting like demolished, but man, Russell Wilson, just surgical. I thought he looked like the best quarterback in the NFL, surpassing Patrick Mahomes, better than Lamar Jackson. I think right now in the NFL, the best quarterback is Russell Wilson, and I'm excited to see him on Sunday Night Football this week as well. We got more to come. We'll take a quick break here. Ben's going to hang out with us for one more segment before he has to go get ready for 3 and Out. We'll be joined by the head football coach of the Savannah State Tigers, Sean Quinn, to talk a little bit more ball here on Second Down on ESPN Radio.
Thank you for bringing us back, Mary J. Blige.
Thank you for that, Cody.
Second Down on ESPN Coastal is presented by the Uniform Source. Now for your ESPN Coastal updates. Milwaukee Bucks superstar Giannis Antetokounmpo
nailed it.
Has won his second consecutive NBA MVP award. Sources told ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski. Woj bomb! Antetokounmpo joined Steph Curry, LeBron James, Stephen Nash, Tim Duncan, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Moses Malone, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell as back-to-back MVPs. That is a great list.
Yeah, the MVP award has now become the anybody not named LeBron James award. So that's a different subject for a different day. But Ben Troop, kind enough to hang out with us for another segment here, and pleased to be joined by the head football coach of the Savannah State Tigers, Sean Quinn. And coach, we were talking about the Thursday night football game there in the last segment. I don't know if you got a chance to catch it, but my question to you is this. Is it ever a good thing if your quarterback throws the ball 61 times in a game?
No, usually that's a low success rate for wins and losses. So, obviously, I think Joe's a heck of a player, but 61, you got to have a run game. You know, you and I have argued over whether or not running backs have any value, but obviously I think you want to run the football. So as a coach, anytime you're throwing 61 times, it's usually not a good thing.
Well, on the flip side of that, the Browns, I think, probably have the best duo of running backs in the NFL right now with Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb. Just what's your overall impression of the style of running back that Nick Chubb is, right? He gets hurt his sophomore year at Georgia, but you finally see him get kind of healthy in his senior year at Georgia. They go all the way to the national championship and just bruising his way through that Oklahoma defense. And then last year, he was just behind Derrick Henry for leading the NFL in rushing. What style of running back is he to you?
He's just a physical downhill guy. I mean, he's I'm trying to think of the big back that used to carry for the Saints all those years. That was a huge guy. Craig Hayward, you know, kind of in that realm of just a physical guy that nobody really wants to, you know, front up in the hole. And they've got some talented guys there. I tell you what, they've got some talented folks. And, you know, obviously Ben knows this, the chemistry is what's been missing there because they've got the talent. It's whether or not the other things are there. But he's a physical guy, good player, man, and fun to watch. And obviously Kareem Hunt's a nice changeup when he's not in the ballgame.
I want to get an answer from both of you guys on this one. I think the Atlanta Falcons are just kind of an enigma, right? We can't really figure out what's wrong with them. You have a really good coach, I think, in Dan Quinn, a guy who's obviously had success in Seattle. It took a team to the Super Bowl. You have Matt Ryan, who I think is a borderline Hall of Famer. Julio Jones is a first ballot Hall of Famer. Todd Gurley is an excellent running back. And you have good guys on the defense as well. There's just something about the team. And, Ben, I'll start with you. The word I always come back to, especially on the defensive side of the ball, is just – stale, right? It just doesn't seem like there's anything exciting or plays being made on that side of the ball.
I'll go with culture. I think what happens is, too, people talk about the Super Bowl hangover. And the thing about it is, I mean, do you got the right people calling the plays that matter? I mean, you know, Dirk Cutter doesn't really scare nobody as far as, like, play calling. I'm not saying that he can't, but I just think that it comes down to the play call. It's like what they were saying about Baker Mayfield, and not to pick on him. Sometimes it's not the pieces. Sometimes it's a person who's putting the pieces together. And I like Dan Quinn. I like the pieces he's put together. But Coach Quinn knows this. When you keep on adding pieces and you don't really have an established culture, especially on defense, how do they gel? This is the first time Dante Fowler Jr. has been the lead dog. He was supposed to be there in Jacksonville, got to find himself when he was out there with the Rams. Now he's not looking to just be the lead dog. He's looking to help the rest of that D-line, not name, you know, Grady Jarrett. I think that when you look at this Atlanta team, you have everything you need. You do not need to have Zeke in the backfield to have a successful running game. You just need to have a complimentary back. I'm not saying that Ty Gurley is – I think he's more than complimentary. But since Matty Ice has come to the Atlanta Falcons, since he's been drafted, it's been on him every single time. They're going to blame it on him if they lose, and they're going to give him half the praise if they win. I just think that now Dan Quinn was there to shore up a defense. If I'm the number one defensive coordinator and Coach Quinn brings me on his staff and I don't elevate his defense, I am not doing my job. Bottom line, it doesn't matter if Coach liked me or not. If I'm, you know, so I just think that at the end of the day, Atlanta is never – I say this. Atlanta is the Indianapolis Colts when they had Peyton Manning. That defense was never, ever going to be seen as being good. And they had – you know, and they went out there and had –
Robert Mathis.
They had Sanders who went out there and won defensive MVP. So all I'm saying is – this Atlanta defense is never going to be seen as a Seattle, as a Ravens, but middle of the road is all they need you to be. Now, think about that. It's hardly ever that a D coordinator going to say, hey, fellas, just don't suck today. Like, just alignment and assignment, and we should be fine. And I know that's crazy, but 4th and 5 is very, very hard to get. 4th and 1 is hard to get. They threw a touchdown pass.
Yeah, 50-yard touchdown pass.
So I just think that it comes back to culture. And the culture has to be established on that defense because we was doing Hall of Famer now yesterday, Coach Quinn, and BJ was saying John Abraham. BJ said no. John Abraham was a first-team All-Pro with the Falcons. But because he played for the Falcons, people don't think he was that good.
Well, Coach, I wanted to ask you this. just speaking on the Falcons defense, if they called you and said, hey man, we need some help. We know you guys are playing spring football. We need some help up in Atlanta. They have the pieces, I think, right? Dante Fowler's a great edge rusher. Grady Jarrett's a top 10 defensive tackle. I think Marlon Davidson could be good. So say they have the pieces to be a good defense, but just something's not clicking. When you break it down with a team like that, where do you start?
How good are they interior wise? I think everything starts with your defensive line and goes from there. And can you defend the run inside out at your inside backer, your defensive tackles? And then how good are you in your front seven? Obviously that league's different than college is. And, you know, I've got some friends on the staff there that are on actually the defensive staff. And, you know, I think they have just worked their heck out of it trying to come up with a solution, and they're good coaches. I've worked with some of those guys, and you know, they're an enigma there. Like you said, for whatever reason, the success hasn't been there, and Dan Quinn knows as much defensive stuff as any coach I've been around. So, you know, I don't really know what the answer is there, but for me as a defensive coach, anytime I come into a new place, first thing I evaluate being a former defensive lineman is a defensive line. Cause if you stink there, the rest is irrelevant. If you're really good there, the rest is irrelevant. And so, you know, we've always, everywhere I've been, we've tried to build from being really good in the front seven, and then your secondary will come along. But you can have the best corners in the world, but if they run it down your throat, or he takes 12 seconds to get a pass rush, it doesn't really matter in your secondary. So what do you got up front?
Yeah, we're getting ready for a big – oh, go ahead. Sorry.
You're really great defenses. You know, we're fortunate right now. We've got all the NFL Cup film comes in every Monday, and we watch each coach is assigned. And, you know, it's amazing to me just watching the 49ers, how good they are on their defensive line, how good Baltimore's offensive line is. I was blown away. As good as Lamar is, and he's phenomenal, how good a front for him. They just do a tremendous job blocking for him. And then when people do somehow get back there, he makes a miss. But to me, it's a front seven league, and still the best D-lines and O-lines are going to be the teams that win every year.
Again, getting ready for a big weekend, NFL, college as well. But I got two guys who were pretty successful at the high school football level, college football level. Now Coach Quinn, of course, the head football coach at Savannah State. Ben went on to play in the pros, All-American at Florida. So I want to ask you guys this. Friday night, a lot of kids around the state getting ready for big games, getting towards region play. Just what are y'all's fondest memories of Friday night? I know Ben had a guy who was about 4'6" that was just haunting his nightmares. They used to track him down all over the field. But what are y'all, some of y'all's fondest memories from the old Friday Night Lights?
Oh man, it's the purest form of football you're gonna get, because the whole thing about it is that's when you wear your jersey all day at school. You know the trash talkers are your best friends. Your best friend is the one saying y'all gonna stink tonight. You know, for me, my mom was my biggest critic. You know, she was like, if we won, she's thinking, who the hell was y'all playing? Y'all won, because I ain't win a lot of high school. But I would just say, it's the fact that, you know, these are guys you grew up with. These are guys for whom, you know, you just want, it's like you find yourself cheering for them. And for me, it was just the fact that how mad our head coaches and assistant coaches, they had something against the other coaches. Like, I don't like those guys. One time my coach coached against his brother. I don't like him. I never liked him growing up. I'm like, so to me, it's just a game within the game, and just a period of it. I mean, that's the last time, man, you got the school spirit, the band, everything that goes along with high school football is what I miss the most. Cause like I mentioned, I mean, I had the freaking Thorpe Award winner on my team. I had a guy that was a two-time All-American. I had the most receiving yards at Furman, and we stunk. So the winning side wasn't really what I remember. I just remember the memories before the game, during the game, after the game.
I would echo some of that. I would say getting up and putting the jersey on all day through school, and then getting that, you know, knot in your stomach somewhere there about fifth period, right after lunch. You start thinking about the game. You got the pep rally, and then Susie smiling at you in the hallway as you walk, looking sharp in your jersey, and out to the game, and playing really well, and having the band, you know, the drum line come out and get on the bus and hear the crowd. And just a neat feeling, like you said, it's its purest form, and a lot of good memories. And a lot of times we go back as coaches, we go watch these games on Friday nights, a little chance for us to relive the past. And our coaches enjoy, I know I do enjoy going to these local games and seeing folks play here. Pretty soon we'll get a chance to be out. And it's fun, you know, it's just such a great time. And like you said, a purest part of your career is going to be your high school career. Before college and scholarships and NFL, just going and playing the ball for the love of the game.
And Coach, I am currently, I don't know if you've seen him yet, but just in case you haven't, I am currently DMing you on Twitter right now. I got to get your take because you're all about the look good, play good, right? So I just DM'd you on Twitter. Georgia releases the new alternate uniforms coming up for this season, the 1980 throwback uniform and a new black top for the team as well. I just need you to grade the uniforms.
You know, I'd be honest with you. I'll have to go with the black jersey. There's pretty darn sharp, man. I like that one. The other one looks a little different. You know, just like I said, I looked at this in about 13 seconds. I'm a little partial to blue, so
okay.
You know, red has different things for me. So, you know, I like blue, but you know, hey, it looks good on Georgia. So, I obviously one of the things that's a struggle with some of those traditional powers like an Alabama, a Georgia, a Penn State. Is their uniform is so historical, it's hard to come up with those alternative uniforms without alienating a large part of their fan base. So, but thought that was pretty neat what they did with the black jersey. I think that's a good look.
And right. There ain't nothing better than blue and orange, right?
That's right, buddy. That's okay. Like staying a Holiday Inn Express. Your food tastes better. You look more handsome. You get all A's. When you put that blue and orange on, good stuff happens.
All right, before we let you guys go, I need one-word answers from all of you. Cowboys, Falcons, Sunday, 1 p.m., who wins? Ben?
Cowboys.
Coach?
Falcons.
There we go. Coach Quinn riding with the Falcons there. Coach, we really appreciate the time. Ben, I know you got to go get ready for 3 and out. Guys, we appreciate y'all talking football with us on a Friday.
Hey. Go Tide. Thanks, guys.
And we got more to come. Cody and I will come back, give you our picks for the weekend as well. Again, a full slate of ACC and Sun Belt games coming up this weekend. Had a few postponements, a couple cancellations, but still a full Saturday afternoon for you as well. We'll come back, give you some of our picks there and some of our NFL picks as well. That's up next on Second Down on ESPN Radio.
Second Down on ESPN Coastal is presented by the Uniform Source.
Indeed.
Now for your ESPN Coastal updates. The Florida Atlantic Georgia Southern football game set for Saturday in Statesboro, Georgia, has been postponed because of positive COVID-19 tests from FAU, the schools announced Friday. Florida Atlantic made the decision to postpone after receiving results of Thursday's coronavirus testing. The Owls canceled practice Tuesday after several players tested positive for the virus.
Yep.
Georgia Southern has players tweeting about, hey, what's going on with the next man up, FAU? Man.
Well, yeah, Georgia Southern, no sympathy for anyone, right? They had 33 guys out last week. So, but again, turning your attention now to number 19, Louisiana. Next week, Louisiana playing at Georgia State this week. And, Cody, that's actually one of our games that we are going to go ahead and pick again. You are missing some games this weekend, but Georgia Southern fans, fret not because there is a full slate of college football coming up on Saturday and then another great slate of NFL games coming up on Sunday and Monday night as well. So, Cody, we'll dive through these college games quickly here. Number 19, Louisiana, as we mentioned, is a 16-point favorite at Georgia State. Georgia State's opener last year, as many people remember, up in Neyland Stadium, knocking off the Tennessee Volunteers. So, again, 16-point favorites there, Louisiana at Georgia State.
Going Georgia State on this one.
Not to win, or just to cover?
Just to cover, all not right. To win.
I'm kind of with you here. You get a big win over number 23, Iowa State. If Louisiana have to go on the road in a Sun Belt game, Georgia State can put up some points. But I think Louisiana pulls away late and covers. So I'm taking Louisiana and the points in that one. Next up, Boston College, Pat Narduzzi and those guys at Duke. 6-point favorite Duke is in this one, Cody. Who you got in that one?
Duke did all right against Notre Dame last week, but I still think they are not going to cover it.
Wow.
So give me them boys.
Yeah, again, Boston College has a really good running back, transferring a quarterback that should be good as well, but Duke, Chase Bryce, I thought he looked okay at Notre Dame. Again, first start there with David Cutcliffe. I think Duke wins at home and covers this one for Duke over Boston College. Another big game coming up for Notre Dame, USF at number 7, Notre Dame. Notre Dame, a 26-point favorite over South Florida in this one. And Ian Book and that offense struggled a little bit in week one against Duke.
Yeah, not the way they played against Duke. It doesn't lead me to believe that they're going to beat USF by that much. I think USF's still going to lose, but only by like 2 touchdowns.
Yep. And I'm with you as well. I think USF doesn't win this one, but I think Notre Dame – maybe 21 points, something around there, 17 okay. points, but it ain't going to be 26 there. I think the game of the week right here, Cody, number 14, UCF at Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech is a 7.5-point underdog in this one.
I'm going with the Canes on this one. They're both ranked right next to each other, right? 17, 18?
No. This is UCF at Georgia Tech.
Oh, UCF, Georgia yeah. Tech. Okay, no, I'm going UCF. I think they're going to come out hot. I think they're going to have an okay team this year. They're ranked compared to Georgia Tech. Only a touchdown. Nah, I'm going by two touchdowns, maybe 10 points.
Yeah, I think UCF probably wins this game. Georgia Tech is a better team than they were last year. You saw Jeff Sims come out. He looked really good for Georgia Tech in his first start for them. But UCF's a good football team.
Yeah, I don't see Georgia Tech beating a ranked team. No, no, no.
No, and yeah, give me UCF and the 7.5 points on the road there. And then moving on, Cody, Sun Belt, 23 App State is a 4.5-point favorite on the road at Marshall. Marshall opened the season with a huge offensive showing. App State struggled a little bit in their first game, so an interesting test for the number 23 Mountaineers on the road.
What's the spread on that?
That is 4.5 points in App State's favor.
I'm going App State. App State's going to win by touchdown.
I'm with you as well. I think probably 10, 14 points there for App State on the road. I think they correct some of those week one mistakes there. This one is interesting because last week, Cody, we talked about Clemson at Wake Forest. They were 33-point favorite, and we thought, yeah, they're going to cover about halftime. Wake Forest stuck in there. But a lot of it, I think, was Clemson handing the ball, running the clock with Travis Etienne, and then they pulled those guys out about midway through the third quarter, and so the offense just pretty much shut down after that. And so usually Clemson's pretty good about covering these big point spreads because they like to put up a lot of points. But in a weird season like this, when you're trying to get some younger guys some playing time, maybe not so much. And then you have the triple option attack of the Citadel here. So the Clemson at home is a 45-point favorite against FCS Citadel.
I'm going.
You think they cover?
I'm going Citadel. Wow. All Citadel is going to do is run it. And I'm thinking the exact same thing is going to happen with Clemson. They're not going to have enough time to beat them that bad, just like you were saying what was going on last week. I'm going, they're still going to lose by like 38 points, though. But I'm going to go Citadel covering it.
Yeah, I just think with the way that the Citadel can work the clock, 45 points is going to be a lot. Like, you just probably get two-thirds of the touches you get in another game against that style of offense. So, yeah, unless Clemson scores a couple of defensive touchdowns or something like that, I think 45 points is a pretty good spread there. Yeah, I'll take the Citadel with the points in that one as well. And then finally here, Cody, number 17, Miami at number 18, Louisville. Louisville is a 2.5-point favorite at home against De'Arik King and the Miami Hurricanes.
Oh, I'm going Canes on this one. Canes got a great quarterback out there, man. I'm telling you, he's going to put up some points, going to beat Louisville. Only 2.5 points. I'm going with the field goal on this one. Maybe two field goals. Miami takes it.
I think Miami looked a little bit rusty in their first game against UAB. And the thing of note from that is UAB had already played a game before that. And so yeah, you had a team coming off of a weird offseason, no spring practice, playing against a team that had already had a game under its belt. And it took about a half and a little bit into the third quarter for Miami to really start cooking on offense. And we talked about this at the beginning of the week. What I think is weird is you have De'Arik King, who's an unbelievable run threat. But for whatever reason, Rhett Lashley, who we thought was going to run that Auburn style of offense where you have the trap plays going on the inside with the running back, and then you have really fast guys coming on the jet sweeps and then letting your quarterback get out and run as well. He decided that he wants to go 3-4 wide and just throw the ball all over the place with De'Arik King. So if they can get back to the running game, get De'Arik King more involved on designed runs, because De'Arik King had a lot of rushing yards against UAB, but a lot of those were just scramble drills during pass plays. So, yeah, if you could get De'Arik King more involved in some designed run plays and get this offense going downhill for Miami, Louisville's really good. Scott Satterfield has done a good job with them. They're probably going to be a top 25 team all year. Mikel Cunningham is a really good quarterback that people need to watch out for in the ACC. But if Miami can run the football the way they have the ability to with De'Arik King at running back there, I think Miami probably wins this game by 7 points. So, yeah, give me them underdogs on the road. I'll take them to win straight up in that game as well. And, Cody, I asked Ben and Coach this in the last one, moving over to the NFL now. The Falcons had a rough game at home. Rough open. I don't think there's any other way to put it. Basically, everything you tried in crucial situations kind of blew up in your face. You went for it on fourth down a couple times. One time from midfield, you didn't get it. The other time in your own territory, you got it and fumbled the ball away against a really good Seattle team. No matter what the actual point spread was at the end of the game, that was a butt kicking on every single side of the ball for the Falcons there. So they go to Dallas now on the road. Just straight up, Cody, in this one, I want you to give me who you think is going to win this football game on Sunday.
Atlanta, they are 10-16. They will lose against teams like Seattle, but win against teams who are probably also 10-16. So they're going to beat the Cowboys. Not by a whole bunch, maybe by 7 points, but give me Atlanta.
Yeah, and Dallas, just for those out there who are degenerates and for just fun purposes, Dallas 4-point favorites at home against the Falcons. Yeah, I think, you know what, I think the Falcons are probably going to win this game too. Again, a weird season, no preseason, brand new head coach there for the Dallas Cowboys. I think Dan Quinn and this team, there's one thing that can be said about keeping Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff, and that's consistency. You know what you're going to get at practice. They know how to bounce back from a loss. You have the talent all over the field. Hopefully get Kendall Sheffield back going. Hopefully get Marlon Davidson so he can make his debut in the NFL as well. I think if you can get him solidified next to Grady Jarrett, they're rotating around on that defensive line. I thought Tad McKinley looked pretty good week 1.
Looked good. Oh, yeah.
Then I think they can hold into this game. Now, here's where the worrisome part is. Does the Falcons' offensive line stand up against that pass rush of Aldon Smith, Dexter Lawrence? They got Everson Griffin.
And you still got Cam out there.
As a backup. And Dontari Poe as a defensive tackle for the Cowboys as well. And they got some dudes playing in the linebacker core as well. So does the offensive line stand up? I think that's where it's going to be. I like what they were trying to do in the first game, right, where it was hand the ball to Gurley on first down and then hand it to him again on second down. And that way, all of a sudden, if he breaks it, great, you got first down. If not, it's 3rd and 4 and it's manageable.
Cam's Seahawks, my bad.
Yeah, but that's fine. But I like what the offense was trying to do, and if you get another week, get under your belt. I like the Falcons in that one as well. So, again, big football weekend coming up. We'll come back, get you prepared for a big show on 3 and Out. Really excited about an interview coming up a little bit later on 3 and Out. 4 o'clock, Ryan McGee from ESPN.com going to join the guys, and you'll want to stick around from this one. Ryan McGee, for anybody that's a college football fan, NASCAR fan, just a sports fan in general, has read his stuff on ESPN, but he's got a new book out called Sidelines and Bloodlines, A Father, His Sons, and Our Life in College Football. And his dad, Dr. Jerry E. McGee, actually officiated over 400 football games at the FBS level, did a couple of Rose Bowls, did a couple of Army-Navy games, which a lot of people think is just the standard when it comes to college football games. So I'm really interested to hear what Ryan McGee has in store for us, just talking about that new book about him, his brother, and his dad in college football. Excited for that coming up there. So Ben, get you ready for a big show of 3 and Out. Final segment of Second Down coming up next.
Listen to Hawthorne Heights and just Christian saying how his mom doesn't understand him because he's so misunderstood. Second Down, obviously. ESPN Coastal is presented by the Uniform Source. Now for your ESPN Coastal updates. The NCAA has granted Tennessee offensive lineman Cade Mays a transfer waiver after initially denying his request. Volunteers coach Jimmy Pruitt told reporters after Thursday's practice. Major played all 14 games at Georgia last season before transferring in January, will still receive a waiver from the SEC to play for the Volunteers this season. He is an expected starter on Tennessee's offensive line if he is eligible.
Yeah, and I think a good look there from the NCAA. That was kind of a weird one, right, because his family's still embroiled in a lawsuit against the University of Georgia. So I think if JT Daniels and Justin Fields and guys like that get cleared, why not a guy like Cade Mays? Still, honestly, Cody, waiting to hear from the Joey Gatewood at Kentucky, transferred in from Auburn, waiting to hear about that. There's some you can find them on the interwebs, but there are some funny rumors about what's going on with Joey Gatewood and that transfer there. So, again, excited, Cody. As of tomorrow, we're officially a week away from SEC football. Georgia kicking it off against Arkansas. And I know we spoke about the uniforms yesterday. Got the news today from UGA. First game of the season at Arkansas, breaking out the red pants. And they said, though, they're like, hey, we're going to break them out and they're going to look good. That's the only time we're ever going to wear them. It's going to be a one-time deal. Probably going to auction them off, give the money to charity. But, hey, enjoy them while they last. against Sam Pittman and the Hogs, because that's the only time you're going to see those red pants for a while. Again, big show coming up on 3 and Out. BJ Bennett, Kevin Thomas, Ben Troop, talking a lot of football, getting ready for a big football weekend.